Welcome, Thrivers, to the Thriving Parenting Podcast, where we're here to celebrate the imperfect journey of parenthood, leveling up in areas that feel icky and out of whack. Our mission is to help you find a more confident and 100% less tired, sustainable version of you, no matter what kind of parenting day you're having. Because I truly believe to thrive as a parent, we need to begin with a thriving you. I'm your host, Jen, a parent of three, RN, mind-body practitioner, baby toddler sleep coach, and parent mentor who has helped over 500 families achieve more rest and level up their parenting life. Join me each week as we embark on a quest to silence your inner critic, drop the shoulds, and redefine norms, raising your little ones with ease, regulation, resilience, all while prioritizing your own well-being too. Through insightful discussions on mindset, parenting, and sleep, we'll cut through the noise and arm you with the tools to thrive, not just survive in parenthood. If you are ready to thrive together, one episode at a time, let's do it. Welcome to another episode of Thriving Parenting. I am so excited for this one, and I know you are too, because I did a recent poll on Instagram and I asked you, I'm doing a sleep episode, what do you want to hear about? And separation anxiety was up there. We also had catnapping, we had talks about awake times and routines, standing in the cot. These are all coming, guys, I promise you, one thing at a time, as well as balancing this podcast out with some real great tools for you as a human being, as a parent. I really want you to feel that you matter and that you can show up in a better way in your parenting when we acknowledge some of our needs too. So it's going to be a combination always, but as I love getting into sleep topics, I cannot wait to talk about this one with you. So I am sure you're going to agree with me here that out of all the developments, all the progressions our children have in the first couple of years of life, this is the crappiest one. This is the shittest one that happens, because all the rest are really exciting, right? They're cognitively evolving, emotionally evolving, like saying new words and new phrases, or physically developing and doing a new movement or something exciting like that. And it's all really positive, right? It can all throw off sleep here and there, but there's a really nice element to it. Whereas separation anxiety can just feel crap for our babies, crap for us, and it can be really hard. It's important to know, though, it does have its place. It does tell us that our children are securely attached to us, because we want to see this development. And actually, if we go back to our ancestry as human beings, if our children didn't develop separation anxiety, and one of these is a fear of strangers, it can be that they get lost in the crowd. We can lose them amongst our tribe. And how do we find our own kid back? Because they'll just go with anyone. Whereas actually, it can be a healthy part of survival for them to fear being separated from their main source of food and survival, which is us, their caregivers. So it does play a crucial role in development. The tricky thing is, just some kids will experience it worse than others, more heightened than others. And we can't change that. We cannot change how our children experience separation anxiety, that intensity. Every child is different. And I can reflect on this with my personal experiences too, because I have three children, and my third, my gosh, if you just looked at my three kids or anyone that knows me personally, you can see there's two that have got more similar temperaments and one that's got a slightly different temperament, which is my beautiful little firecracker, my youngest child. But her nervous system, everyone's nervous system is wired differently, but hers stands out more so compared to my other two kids, because I've got that comparison in front of me, right? So she just experiences life more sensitively, more intensely. That's just her. I cannot change that. All I can do as a parent is nurture and be there for her when she needs and when she's feeling these, and help her co-regulate in these moments. So separation anxiety for us hit us pretty intensely. When it came to dropping her off at daycare, oh my gosh, it's like my whole body was feeling really tense, because I just knew what was potentially going to come, like this big moment where she just looked at me with those big eyes of hers and said, "What are you doing leaving me here? Like, how dare you do this?" And it just felt awful. It felt really horrible as a parent to do that. And while we worked through some separation anxiety, it was a lot of fake it till I made it, to be honest, like to be able to put my hand up and wave goodbye to her at daycare and try and keep a smile on my face and say, "Have an amazing day. I love you. I will see you soon," was really hard. And sometimes I would come into my car and just bawl my eyes out and cry and think, "Oh my God, am I just being an awful parent? Should I just leave her at home with me? Like, maybe I can adjust something," you know, trying to overcompensate, I guess, for this development and think, okay, maybe I can just band-aid it and just not expose her to it, because it just felt really crap for the both of us. But as you'll learn, that is not the answer. Avoiding separation is not the answer. And I'll talk into that shortly as well. So when can it happen and why does it happen? First of all, we can see the first elements of separation anxiety around 6 to 10 months. And this is a really common time where they're getting quite aware. They're really starting to potentially experience some stranger anxiety where they're not so forthcoming going to someone else. You get these where they used to go to someone and suddenly they look at you going, "Nah, I want to be with you. What are you trying to do? Give me to someone else." We can really start to feel that. There's also, I find, a lot of 8, 9 month olds, especially for my son. I definitely noticed a peak around 9 months for sure. But 8 months as well, we can start to see them recognizing that when something disappears, you still exist. And this can be hard around sleep times because they know you're just maybe just outside that door. So that can be really apparent. It can also peak again around 14 to 18 months and 2 years as well. So it really does have its peaks and troughs where it seems to settle down. They seem to be okay. And then suddenly they don't want you to leave. They don't want you to leave the room. So it can be really, really tricky. And this isn't at sleep times. This is during the day as well. It's not just there. So the three main reasons it happens. Number one, we've got the stranger anxiety I've just fed into, which is between 6 and 12 months, you may not notice they're super comfortable around unfamiliar faces. They're not always so keen to go to someone else. And this can be often triggered by someone new stepping in for a caregiver role. So say if it's around 6 months or between 6 and 12 months, you return to work and your baby starts daycare, or maybe a mother-in-law or mother or someone else is coming in to look after them, we might see that they suddenly experience some separation anxiety behaviors. And separation anxiety behaviors that you may see with your child, and this is depending on what the three reasons are, it doesn't matter, these are all the behaviors that you might see, can be being clingy and needing to know where you are at all times, wanting to be around you more than usual, wary of other people, particularly emotional as in general, their general persona, difficulty going to sleep, maybe night waking, difficulty settling, refusing sleep altogether, distress or panic at their parents' absence, and parental preference. So these are all potential signs that you might see if your child is experiencing separation anxiety. So if your child is reacting to separation anxiety due to learning object permanence, what you might see is that suddenly when you walk away from them or say leave them on the playmat, they start to react with more emotion than they did before. And they're starting to clock you and be like, "Where are you going?" Or maybe they've also started to get really upset when you leave the room at sleep times when they didn't before. That can be a huge sign that they're going through this development. And test the waters. They're learning that object permanence, that cause and effect. Test the waters here. If you were to get a ball and place it behind your back, do they look for where it could be behind your back? If they're sort of like leaning to maybe try and check it out, chances are they're well and truly in that development. Or if, for example, you put a ball under a cup and they're like, "Okay, I think it's under there still," you know, they're getting aware of that. That is another sign. Whereas if they're not in that object permanence development, you're likely going to put a ball behind your back and they'll be like, nah, forgotten about it. Don't even know, don't even care. So practicing games like peekaboo can be really powerful. I like doing it with something like a blanket or a comforter even, and popping your head around, or even just using your hands like on the change table, covering your face and then saying peekaboo can be really great to reinforce that safety that when you do go away and you're out of sight, you're not far away and you will be returning. And the third reason separation anxiety can rear its ugly head is physical development. As your baby becomes more and more mobile, they go from like sitting to crawling, exploring, there can be some uncertainty related to that because they've got this newfound independence. And it can also mean I can separate more easily away from you. I don't know if I like that. So that in itself can create periods and peaks of separation anxiety. I want to share an example with you as well as to where a separation anxiety period was triggered for a client. And my client, who is 15 months old, she went on a holiday to Bali, beautiful, amazing. And she came home and her son got sick and he went back to going to daycare because she's a working parent. And she just said, oh my gosh, the separation anxiety is really intense right now. And we can see a couple of things there. We can see going away on holiday, so the change, so something changing. We can also see illness, 100%. We can see when they're not feeling their best. We can see potentially we're offering more support in that time, and that can then make that harder to separate away from you at those times. So they want to be close, right, when they're sick. So really, really common. And then returning to daycare as well. So all of these things have definitely triggered some separation anxiety for her son. And mum explains him to be clingy, either on her or if he's on the floor, he's wanting to touch her or be close to her. And it's really hard because she said, just like we chatted about, it's like these moments are super, super hard in the moment and we can feel really touched out. But at the same time, we will look back at these moments and be like, oh, remember when they were like this? And it's just such the crazy duality of parenting. It's like literally you can love them, but it can be so challenging and overwhelming all at once. Now, you may be wondering if your child has separation anxiety or not, or it may be really obvious. But one thing I really want you to know that if your child is super, super fine to move away from you during the daytime and you talk to them about going to the toilet or getting a drink and they don't really seem that bothered, or you move out of sight and then come back and they're just pretty cool and chilled, then they act up at sleep time and get super upset about you leaving the room and really, really carry on there with a lot of distress, that's not separation anxiety. That is them acknowledging the separation and not really loving the fact that you're leaving them at sleep time. True separation anxiety, we're going to see that during all your movements during the day, like when they're really feeling anxious about you, their caregiver, being out of sight. It doesn't just switch on at sleep times. It's more so at sleep times. We can say for a lot of kids, and this is really normal, potentially being away from you all night long can feel not so great. And our children are designed to want to be close to us. So we can see them just choosing a higher preference that, hang on a minute, I want you to be here with me at sleep times. Remember, you as their primary caregiver are a huge motivator. They want to hang with you. They want to be with you. And again, that separation is not always anxiety driven at sleep time. So check in with what's going on during the day. So let's get down to some troubleshooting. How can you support your child through separation anxiety? Firstly, it's really important to practice short-term separation. It's really important to be practicing short-term separations in a safe place outside of sleeping time. So mum's just going to the toilet, I'll be right back. talk to them. Maybe you're talking or singing to them out of sight. I remember having to do that for a period of time with some of my kids. I'll be on the toilet saying, "Mommy's just on the toilet, I will be back." So as you can hear, it was like my voice was quite calming and melody-like. It wasn't like, you're okay, mommy's coming back, don't worry, don't worry. It was just like me singing, "Mommy's on the toilet, I'll be right back." It was just a lot more calming and regulating over panic-driven talk. But yeah, I do remember doing that and just being like, oh my gosh. Or just being like, "Mommy's putting the washing away, just sticking on the washing machine, pressing the button now, I'll be back soon." You know, all this stuff. It's really, really knowing that this is a short-term thing. It doesn't have to last for months and months and months, but they will go through phases and stages of it in those first couple of years growing up. So finding what works for you, it's not a one-size-fits-all, but definitely having short-term separations as practice points is really crucial. Don't stop not going away or going to the toilet with your baby on your lap because you can't leave them. Like, take that time to go to the toilet, get yourself regulated, do a wee on your own. Maybe they're right by the door. If they've crawled to you, that's fine. But you don't have to pick them up and take them and sit them on your lap to go to the toilet. You can, again, just not lock yourself away if you're just finding it really difficult for much separation. But the idea, if your baby is really struggling with separation, keep them short and sweet. Don't be taking 10 minutes to do something. Like even my example of putting the washing on, you might find that that's too long initially, and it might be just popping into another room and coming back again and saying, "Hey, mummy's back." Something simple like that. So you can definitely build up that window of tolerance for them with separating from you and really keep doing it. It's so, so powerful. Are you ready to explore your baby's potential? Take away the shoulds and the can'ts and they're just a baby and really understand what they are capable of. With your guidance and support, your responsiveness and respectfulness, do you want to explore how you can have influence and how you can support sleep and optimize that in your home? Do you want to find out what tools are going to be amazing for your parenting journey that is going to support the needs of your baby alongside the needs of you? Remember, you are just as much as a human being. Your needs do not disappear once you become a mum. And every time you try and push them down, they will come out in a new way. So if you're ready, if you want to explore this, you want to find out, learn more, reach out. I'm here. Reach out. I have free 15-minute consultations where I love to chat about your situation. You can decide if this is something or getting coaching in this area is something you want to explore for yourself and your baby, and then it's up to you. I have so many programs available, so much tailoring involved. This is what makes the difference. Another thing we can do is lots of positive talk, support and encouragement for independent play opportunities during the day, and staying available for reassurance when they need you. So just as the positive talk I was giving you an example of like singing or having a melody-like tone to our voice rather than, you're okay, it just really does feed that anxiety for them. So if we can really concentrate on how our emotional tone sounds, is it like, "You're safe, mummy's back," we're really talking in that melody-like tone, which can be much more confidence-building and reassuring for them. Remember also, you're not a one-stop pony. You have so many ways of co-regulation and supporting them. So try a layered support system. So for example, if you go and get a drink of water and in that time that you've left, you've told them that you're leaving, they have got super, super upset, try and just come down to their level first and say, "Hey, mummy's here. Mummy just went and got a drink of water. What are you doing down here?" See if your presence and voice is enough. If that's not enough, add some touch. Maybe you touch their, if they're laying on their back, maybe you hold their feet and you keep talking to them and smiling and looking confident and positive. And then they're able to really co-regulate with you and stop. So they learn that actually you can meet that need. You can support them in other places than arms. Of course, if that's not enough, absolutely pick them up and give them a cuddle. But we're trying to come back to them and really let them know that actually what we did was safe. This is a safe place that I left you because you know this space. And that's really highly important. We don't want to just leave them in a house or at a friend's house that they're not familiar with while they're peaking in separation anxiety and think they're going to be okay with it. We want to make sure that we know this space, they know the space, so that you can practice these safe opportunities away. So when we know that information, we want to think, how can we show them they are calm and safe? How can my actions bring calm and safety, not insecurity and anxiety? I promise you, even if your baby has got upset on you leaving, it is a tolerable moment of stress for them. And if you work on creating a confident, responsive approach on returning, they will be able to develop more flexibility in your absence. Start to tolerate those natural life daily stresses that they're going to be exposed to a lot of their lifetime. And it's just important that we create that moment where we do offer a response when they need it and really gauge what response is needed in that time. And don't forget to say goodbye or tell them what you're doing. They need to know. They need to know and understand our communication. So don't avoid prolonging separations or sneaking away. That's a big no-no for separation anxiety. You're potentially just protecting yourself in that moment from hearing your baby cry or feeling stressed and anxious about going away, but you're not helping them. You're not fostering that safe and security that they need from you by sneaking away. They need to feel that they can trust you. They need to feel safe outside of your arms and outside of your absence. And we can do this by not sneaking away or not prolonging separations because we're too scared and fearful of their responses. They are just being a human, and it's up to us to potentially look inward. Why do I find myself being triggered? Why do I find myself not being able to allow my baby to express this emotion? Why do I feel I have to fix it? Because then we can start to look at ways to support ourselves first. Remember, your oxygen mask needs to be placed before you can support and co-regulate with your child. So if you are feeling dysregulated by leaving your baby alone for a minute while you get a drink, we want to work on that. We want to work on supporting you, your self-regulation at that time, so that you can show up as the best parent for them and support them through this normal, natural development with a bit more ease and less stress and anxiety for yourself. We are such a walking bunch of cues for our kids, and they are so responsive to our body language. If we are feeling tense and anxious, 100% they're going to feel it. They're going to mirror that. Co-regulation is creating that self-regulation first so they can mirror calm, safety, trust feelings, security feelings. That's what we want. And remember, your attachment to your child is healthy. It's strong. It's not a piece of glass that's waiting to be shattered and broken. It is strong. It's robust. It can tolerate these low levels of stress that are part of daily life. It can tolerate that. So remind yourself that you are not going to break your baby. So now let's get into, what if you know your baby is experiencing a lot of separation anxiety? They won't let you out of their sight, and it's affecting and impacting sleep now, and you're finding it really challenging, because I work with clients all the time that are experiencing this, and this is hard. Like, if I can say what can be one of the most hardest things is seeing our kids feeling this intense separation, and it's feeding on to sleep and sometimes creating even more sleep disruptions, which can be, again, feeding into that overtiredness, and they're more tired, and then it's like they're more dysregulated. It's a horrible cycle to be on. So what can we do? First of all, we need to consider creating rituals and routines and preparations around sleep, transitional periods, wind downs, whatever you want to call it, but things that they can rely on that are predictable leading up to the sleep process. If your baby is 7 months and older, comforter, 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 like these can be so fantastic, these transitional objects at sleep time to aid and support your child in a period of separation away from you. And some of you might say, well, I give my baby a comforter, but they don't gel with it. They don't like it. We can really feed into that. Have they got other associations that have given them little or no need for a comforter? Or is it something that we're expecting them to just grow attached to it straight away without any rituals or any routines around them? Because we can feed into that and we can create some really loving routines around comforters. This can be that every sleep time you go, where's Teddy? Here he is, or whatever he may be called or looks like. And we can imitate sleep with them. We can give them to them when they're getting ready for sleep, like popping on their sleeping bag or having a feed before bedtime. We can be holding the comforter with us, and then we can pop them down and give them the comforter in a really positive reinforcement way that this is going to keep you safe. This is your transitional object between me and you. When I'm not here, this teddy is amazing to have. After sleep can be really important as well. So when you get them up from sleep or for the morning, you can say and talk about the comforter. Did you sleep with Teddy last night? He looks like he's had a good sleep. Let's wave him goodbye. Bye-bye, Teddy. See you next time. So they're constantly seeing it as like, wow, mum loves this thing. This is a really cool thing to have in my cot space. And this can breed that security and trust that it's okay to be away from you at sleep times. Another thing to consider is, do they go into their bedroom, the door gets shut, and the whole house just goes silent? Like, that in itself can be quite scary. Like, they're like, I know mum's, you know, if they're 8 months or so, I know mum's out there, but I can't hear her, can't see her. Is she around? I'm not sure. And that in itself. So don't be tiptoeing around your house, creating a quiet space. Just carry on with normal noises, normal daily things. Maybe you've got the radio on or the TV on, or you're chatting to someone, or there's other kids in the house. But they get to see that when they're separated from you at sleep time, it doesn't just create this, is anyone here? Hello. It can feel that, ah, I can hear everyone on the outside. I can feel safe to let go, relax, and drift off into sleep. Even the door open can be powerful as well. I actually really love it for toddlers, especially the 18-month-olds I meet. Often the 18-month-olds, especially that I meet, having the door open can be a godsend. It's placing them down to sleep. And some of these children have been falling asleep independently for months and months and months, and suddenly they've hit a peak in separation anxiety. A door can be amazing, where we can say goodnight, walk out, but the door remains open and they suddenly feel a bit closer to us. So I love that as a tool to support toddlers through separation anxiety as well. So if you are part of your child, baby, toddler's sleep routine right now, they are utilizing your presence or physical contact or support to drift off to sleep, we can say that during separation anxiety, that's all going to still be needed, right? That's a given. So I think that in itself is just hopefully reassuring you that these times will get easier. And if that's something you want to keep doing, keep being there for them. Don't suddenly decide that this is not a good thing. They're needing you at those times. If you've been a really big prominent part of their sleep process, they're going to 100% need you at these times of development, whether it's separation anxiety or learning something new cognitively, emotionally, or physically. They're likely going to rely on you more so during those periods. If your child has previously been going to sleep independently and suddenly they're now screaming when you leave the room, oh my gosh, I feel you. That can be so, so tricky. First of all, if that's what they've been doing, we can make sure with all the tools we've talked about before, that we're practicing those separated opportunities during the day, we're potentially really upping our connection time with them during the day, making sure they get their cups full from us, especially if there's been a change in the process, like going back to work or starting daycare. They're likely going to be seeking way more connection from you, and that's really normal. So we can do it outside of sleep times. We might decide to spend a bit more time in their room prior to sleep time if we feel that their room is just being used as the sleep separation area. We want to enrich that room with positive interactions during the daytime as well. Keep it as an open door room, not just as a separation at sleep time. Make it active, play in there, relax in there, lie on the floor in there, do reading in there, whatever it might be. But keep that room as a room to visit, not just a completely separate room that creates or can feel an increased separation anxiety. And play around with the wind downs before bedtime. Are they really struggling? Do we need to add a book if we don't read a book already? Do we, again, want to play a little game in there before we get them ready for sleep? Do we want to give some extra time in there? And I really want you to connect back to you in this moment. Remind yourself that even if they're seeming more distressed at sleep times, that room hasn't changed, right? You haven't just decided to put them in a unsafe place, a bed of crocodiles for them to potentially be eaten overnight. So your confidence, the way you mirror your confidence that this is still okay, this is still a safe place, is without a doubt one of the most powerful tools. And I've been there. I've had to fake it sometimes till I made it, because not that I like that as a tool overall, but sometimes if they're picking up on our body language and we're getting really tense, sometimes it is just trying to fake it or remind ourselves, this isn't a bad thing. This is safe. This is safe. Because even though we're maybe fearing their responses, it's not going to benefit them or ourselves if we start to dread sleep time. I want you to go into sleep saying, this is safe. And hey, how can I show them this? How can I be that calm co-regulator for them? How can I show them that despite this development they're feeling, nothing's changed? I'm still going to be that consistent person for you. This is still safe and okay. And we'll get through this together. So as best as we can try to keep a lot of the familiarity to their bedtime routine that they know and trusted before. If we keep those familiar steps, maybe just lengthen them here and there, or if we're finding that it's harder actually being in the room, we're doing too much because we're trying to preempt the crying and we're spending too much time trying to make sure that they don't cry when they go down, that in itself can have a reverse effect. So we can play around with what wind down may suit them the best and really try and foster that confidence in parenting, reminding ourselves that we are the adult, they are the child. They need that direction and support from us. They don't have that brain capacity to know. And we need to stand in as their guider sometimes and that person that can be the leader and say, yeah, nah, you've got this and I've got you. So if you were to pop them down confidently as you normally do, hand them the comforter, say goodnight, walk out the room as you normally would, and they're then screaming and super, super upset, then of course we're returning, right? Even if they've been self-settling or doing that the majority of the time, we need to respond to what we're seeing in the moment. So we can say, yep, they're either going to settle themselves or they're not. And that's when they need us in the room. Think about during peaks of separation anxiety to if they have been falling asleep independently, we don't need to start putting them to sleep. See your role of supporting them as much as they need. How can maybe my presence and just my calming voice can be enough to help them regulate and drift off. Always just build up your layers and then you can taper them off when you think and feel that they're over that separation anxiety period. Treating it this way and not being scared that, oh my gosh, they've needed more support for the last 3 days. Have I created a rod for my own back or a bad habit? No, if you can just keep saying that tomorrow might be a new day, that separation and peak of anxiety may have tapered down and may have resolved, and I can treat each sleep as a new opportunity, that is the healthiest way to view it, because we're never just saying, okay, we need to do something completely different now. We're constantly just attuning in the moment, bringing on co-regulation, backing it off when we're not needed, and playing around with the level of co-regulation they need within that period. Whew. Well, I feel that's a lot. I feel that's a lot of talk on separation anxiety. We've talked about briefly my personal experience on how some kids definitely do experience it more intensely than others. We've talked about peaks, that it can naturally come at different periods of time, and three reasons why it can happen due to physical development, object permanence, stranger anxiety, stranger awareness. They're the three main things of development that will cause separation anxiety. It can be triggered by change, whether they have suddenly had a new caregiver or you've returned to work or something has changed within their normal daily life. We can foster supporting them through separation anxiety by not fearing separation, by still practicing short bursts of time away, utilizing that during the daytime, not being scared to say goodbye. Make sure you say goodbye and you return and you support them with reassurance and safety in your emotional tone. We can bring in rituals around sleep time, comforters, things like that, that they get familiar and feel secure with. What else? What else have I left out? I think that's about it. So I think that's it. I will leave it here with a quote. The next time you're so frustrated and overwhelmed that you're about to lose it, try and take a brief self-aware moment and really feel just how big those feelings are. How hard is it to process them calmly in the heat of the moment? And how difficult it is to control your negative reactions. Then, next time your child is losing it or feels overwhelmed, imagine those great big feelings in a small body and how hard it must be to process them without an adult's wisdom, and how difficult it must be to control their reactions without an adult's experience. And then take a breath and use your adult wisdom and experience to help them process their big feelings and to guide them through their natural childlike reactions by modeling a mature adult response. That's by L.R. Nost. Until next time, Thrivers. Thank you for tuning into today's episode of Thriving Parenting. I hope this episode has inspired you in some way to embrace the journey with all of its imperfections, with more confidence, joy, and self-compassion. As a serial podcast sharer myself, I know the power that one shared episode can have for someone. So if you know anyone who would benefit from this episode, pay it forward and share the love and support with them. If you'd like to connect with me and find out more about how I can support you on your parenting journey, you can find me over on Instagram, where my handle is sleep_thrive_grow. For now, my advice is to embrace your human need to grow so you can start to thrive in the best way you can. Because happy, healthy parenting starts with a happy, healthy you. Until next time, Thrivers.